want to begin with a story that Rabbi Waxman reminded me of when he said, when I went back to America. And I think he said with a certain tone of negativity there that we left America to go to Shaavim to go to America. So I want to make it clear. And when I went at the time, the Rosh Yeshiva of Shaavim, Rabbi Schlesinger, I was in my third year, I did not want to go back to America. And he did not want to paskin the question of whether I should go back to America and listen to my parents. So he said, you know what, it's above, he didn't say it this way, but it's above my pay grade. Let's send you to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. So he sent me to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach with a letter of introduction to with the following question. In other words, I could stay in Eretz Yisrael, learn Eretz Yisrael, or I can go back to America. At the time, the idea was to go back to Baltimore to go to college in Johns Hopkins. So I go in, he reads the letter, he says a few words to me. He says to me, Tachzor l'America. So I made a face. He said to me, Ma, tolo mutzeim apsak sheli? So I said, no, chas v'shalom, you know, you don't say to v'shalom v'zalman, you're not satisfied with this psak, even if you're not. And then I continued the conversation, said, go back, you'll go for 2 years, and your parents will see you don't like being in America, they'll let you come back, so then you'll come back in 2 years, which in fact is what happened, but I got a degree in the meantime, and came back 2 years later to the mirror. But the Maisa, the next day, the Rosh Yeshiva called him and said, did you really mean it's a psak? It's a strange thing to pass in halacha that somebody has to go back to America to go to yeshiva and college. So I said, yes, it's a psak. So I was stuck. My entire life's course was determined by that meeting with Rav Shlomo Zalman. And the reason why I'm in America today is because of it. And I think you should all ask a shaila before you go back to America to make sure that you're allowed to go as well after you stay for 3 years. Now, the topic which we're going to discuss today, we'll digress perhaps a bit in the middle for me to reminisce further, but the topic we're going to discuss today is the Darkei Musar and how to learn Musar. So I wanted to tell you something which you should remember, and I ask forgiveness from the MTA boys here if they heard this before from me, but I wanted to share with you something which I heard here in Shaavim for the first time from Rabbi Schlesinger in a Sicha, and it made a tremendous impression upon me for the rest of my life, and now 35 some odd years later. And that is the Akdama Rav Shimon Shkok to the Shari Yosher. If you haven't learned, has anybody learned it inside yet? One person. Okay, you don't know what Judaism is until you've learned the Akdama to Shari Yosher. That's basically in a nutshell. So the idea of the Akdama to Shari Yosher really connects into this parasha a little bit. We'll leave that for later if we have time, how to connect into the parasha. But Rav Shimon Shkok talks about the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu. And he says, what does it mean to be Kadosh? And he says that Rashi, of course, says Kedusha means to be Kedusha min Arayos, and Ramban says not to be Novo Birshus HaTaira, and he says he doesn't like those pshatim. So it can't be that that's the precise pshat, because it says Kedushin Tiyu Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. You have to be Kadosh because I have Kadosh Baruch Hu am Kadosh. And you should be, the Medrash says, you should be just like me. I'm above and beyond. But there can be a similarity between your Kedusha and my Kedusha. So the question obviously is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't be warned against the Arayos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't obviously be a novel of the Shus HaTorah. So how, if that is the definition of Kedusha, how do we understand the connection between our Kedusha and the Kedusha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So if Rav Shimon comes up with his Yisoid, a very, very important Yisoid, which is that the word Kadesh means to designate or devote. That's why we have a Kadesh for somebody who's devoted to inappropriate purposes, just like we have Kadosh for something which is devoted to appropriate purposes. So Rav Shimon says, to somebody who's mukdash to something, is somebody who's devoted to a purpose and is directed at that goal. And that is what they are striving to accomplish in the totality of their life. Says, quoting Ramchal, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create the world? Ramchal says, one level of understanding is the HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Lehetiv, right there, Chatzov, Lehetiv, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good, the good wants to do good, and therefore created the world to do good to the world. I'm going to digress here for a moment. I'm going to tell you something which, the first time I heard it, I thought it was absolutely stupid, And then later on over the years, I realized how profound it actually was. So now it's going to sound very strange, but I want you to remember this. And think about it sometime, 10 years, 20 years from now, maybe you'll more appreciate it. They say that somebody once asked the Rebbe Rashab. Rebbe Rashab was the Lubavitcher Rebbe 3 Rebbes ago. And they asked him, why did Kadosh Baruch Hu create the world? So he said, there is a Medrash. The Medrash says in Parshas Truma, Nisaveh Kadosh Baruch Hu liyos lodir batachtoinim. Kadosh Baruch Hu desired to have a dwelling place down here below. So therefore he created the world. And he said, and if you're going to ask me why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had such a taiva, had such a desire, he said in Yiddish, afa taiva frek me nishkin kashis. On a desire you can't ask questions. End of story. That was a very strange story. I'm not even going to try to explain it to you. But someday, think about it, and you'll see how it fits into Reb Shimon and many, many other things. But remember that. Afakaiva frek mirnish kankashas. Now, getting back to Reb Shimon. So Reb Shimon says that Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world behating. Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world in order to do good. So therefore, if he's makdish himself that purpose, we have to be makdish ourselves that purpose as well. The definition of Kedusha is to be devoted to being mated. And a person is in this world to be a Tzelem Elohim, a Tzelem Elohim Baras Adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Tzelem, so to speak, is Halehitiv. Our Tzelem is Lehitiv. That is what we are here for. Nothing else, no more, no less. Now, says Reb Shimon, obviously, we can't be mated to the same extent as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why Kedusha so lemala mikedusha seinu. His kedusha is higher than ours because he can be more devoted to being native than we can. But the same idea for us of kedusha is that of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kedusha, which is lehitiv. And he says, in that context, everything a person does has to be measured. He says, he doesn't use this. I digress for a moment here as well. When I was in yeshiva here, there was we had some very, very great rabbeim, Rosh Yeshiva. We had one of my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Zalaznik Zatzal, was a Talmud of Mr. Zalman Meltzer. And another Rav Zimitrovsky was come to say Shia was a Talmud of Shmuel Rozovsky. And we had a Mashgiach my first year here. This was Rabbi Gittelman, was a Talmud of Yerucham, the Mir Mashgiach. And there was a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous array of knowledge, eclectic knowledge from different perspectives. I used to have fun, but Zalesnik was a Talmud of Mrs. Zalman, which was more or less Chaim Brisker's approach. And Rav Zimitrovsky was a Talmud of Shmozovsky, which was Shimon Shkop's approach. And those two don't get along. So I used to go from one to the other, probably was like Torah Rechilus. I used to say what one said in Mishir to the other one, and used to get their reactions back and forth. I think it's mutter for the purposes of learning. So the idea is that you can, when you're in yeshiva, you can get a tremendous amount from your rabbeim, and you should know the rabbeim here have tremendous mesorah, even though we don't often talk about it. They have seen great people in their lives, and you especially, Rabari, you should speak to him about his grandfather, and there are great people from which you can learn through their children and their grandchildren, the Talmidim, Talmidim. But, so once one of the Bachrim came to Rav Zalesnik, and he said, Harav, ha'im utar lechol steak. So permitted to eat steak. Rav Zalesnik said, Habibi, maze steak. He had no clue what a steak was. So this is, I don't think you can find something in Israel like that today. But this idea, the idea of living pashtus, living a simple life, was, and devoting it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was something which is obviously intrinsic to that type of mentality. So, Reb Shimon doesn't mention steak, but he does mention wine. And he says that, he does mention Bisra Shmina, he does actually, so I guess that means steak. He says if a person can eat Bisra Shmina and Yain Yashan, a person has choice meat and special wine, and it could be an act of Kedusha, or it could be an act of Novel Bishus HaTorah. What defines whether it is an act of Kedusha, an act of Novel Bishus HaTorah? It is whether he eats it in order to give himself Koyach to be Meitiv, or doesn't eat it in order to give himself Koyach to be Meitiv. If you eat a steak for the purpose of enhancing yourself in order to be Eved Hashem better, so then that's an act of Kedusha. If you eat a steak because you enjoy the pleasure of eating a steak, the fact you make a bracha is not good enough. That is not an act of Kedusha. It's antithetical to Kedusha. Now, of course, human beings are human beings. We're not perfect. We're far from it. But the idea is to try and grow in doing things as manifestations of Kedusha in order that they are facilitating our capacity to lehitiv. And then Rabbi Shimon asks a very important further question. He says, I don't understand something. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us lehitiv, to make that we should be made do good to others, so why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give each and every one of us a tremendous egotistical drive? Every one of us has this love of self, which seems to run a direct contradiction to the idea of Kedusha, according to Reb Shimon's definition. So if you were Reb Shimon, what would you answer? You'd say, it's a nisoyon. It's a test. You have to overcome Avas Atzmo in order to become a meitiv. But Reb Shimon says differently. Reb Shimon says it's a beautiful, beautiful yisoyon, which is, the question is, what the definition is of your ani? How do you define yourself? Is yourself defined just as your personal body and your bodily pleasures? Says that's almost nobody's like that. There are very base and corrupt people like that, but most people define their self at least as their body and soul. That's a very basic level. And then there's people define their self as themselves and their families. A person very often says that him, when he takes into account those things which are as precious and dear to him, they're just as dear as himself, even more than himself, that's his family. Then you extend, and then you have people whose sense of self extends to their community. And then people's sense of self extends to all of Am Yisrael, and then you have a people whose sense of self extends to the entire world, says Reb Shimon. He says, this is what Hillel meant, where he said, Im ein ani li mili, uchshani latzmi moani. If I'm not for myself, who's for myself? But if myself is only atzmi, if my ani is only ani atzmi, moani, what is my ani worth? It's worth worthless. Ani has to be ever expanding. And I think that this should be our definition of a tzaddik, the working definition. It's hard to pin down what exactly a tzaddik is. But a good working definition of who we sense is a tzaddik is somebody who we can sense has a concern for people beyond himself to the similar extent that he has for his, so to speak, personal self. A tzaddik is somebody who has a tremendous concern, whether they sit in their own Dalai Lamas and learn all day, whether they go out and are Marbitz Torah, whether they go to work and they're Koveitim Torah. Being a tzaddik doesn't require you to be learning constantly. It might help, but it requires, tzaddik means that you are somebody who's concerned, your etzem, your ani, has expanded beyond your etzem to include other people. Now, this is very, very important, because the Gra comes in Mishlei says, and Ber Gimel Pasuk Yudalit said, I don't know the Grah by Mishlei by heart, I just have to know this Grah. The Grah says that, so the Pasuk says, Achzeik b'musar al taref. Hold on to Musar, don't leave it, lose your grip. So Grah says, the Grah, let's take a step back a minute. The Grah, the Vilna Gaon, we associate with the arch Lithuanian approach of Torah, 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 and more Torah. So the Grah here says, not that way. Grah says, Ki ikar mashu adam chai. The main reason you're alive is to break the midah which you have not broken till now. Says with tzarich lizchazek al torek. You have to mechazek yourselves. Kim lo, because if not, lama lo chaim. Why should we give him life? What is life worth? So the reason why you're in this world, the reason why you're alive from this moment to the next moment, but Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't chas v'shalom strike you down dead, is because you're working on shmiras amidos. Where you still have a possibility of doing so. If not, your life is worthless. You might be walking around, breathing, eating, sleeping, but you're brain dead. There's no meaning to your life. So what does it mean, Shvira Samidos, is the purpose why we're alive? You know that Rabbi Shlomo Salanter said, it's easier to learn all of Shas than it is to break one meter raw. I want to tell you that Baruch Hashem, I've learned through Shas several times, and Yerushalmi as well, and it's harder than learning Shas several times, not just one time, to break a Midah Ra. It takes a lot of effort to change oneself. But that's why a person is here. How is it fit? Obviously it's Reb Shimon, because the Midos Ros are what prevent us from becoming the Mitivim which we're supposed to be. Midos Ros are egotistical. They are Akina Akaiva Vakavod Matim Esodim in Olam. The main one, though, is Kavod. The main Yitzhara is Gaiva. All other avers come because a person is egotistical. It comes from there. A sense of self, which is not to be mevata oneself to the service of others, to be made through others, but to focus on oneself. That is the shorish of all avers. So therefore, a person has to break midos in order to be a mativ. That's part and parcel of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, in order that we should be more like Him. It's very hard to do. I tell people all the time that one of the reasons, you know, we very few, I don't know if you've noticed, we have very few tzaddikim in our day and age. There are not too many around. There used to be probably more. My theory, this is the Beckhoffer theory of the lack of tzaddikim, is that it's because we drive. Driving, and if you, particularly if you drive in Israel, you'll see that driving is antithetical to midos tovos. It's not possible, when you drive, if you honk, you're ready displaying kas. If you're trying to pass somebody when you shouldn't, then you're displaying tacharus, inappropriate competition. If you get annoyed because the light is too long, lack of savlonus. There's so many midos rovos which we develop in the course of driving, that I don't know how it's possible for us to be tzaddikim nowadays. The only way that the bigger, greater people I've seen are people who have, who don't drive. I was always hoped to become a Rosh Yeshiva for more than one purpose, but one of the purposes was, I hope when I became a Rosh Yeshiva, somebody would drive me around. I saw Rabbi Yarmer get into his car before, obviously it doesn't work. So but the idea is that a person has to work on their midos, and it's very hard. Because there's so many things which impede upon us from developing midos tovos. Now, in the 19th century, there developed, in fact, several schools of thought. The Talmidim Rebbe Saul Salanter, who came to various different approaches by which a person works on their midos and by which a person grows in their kedusha. Now, I want to point out there was a tremendous machlokes in the 19th century between the Rebbe Saul Salanter and Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker was the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin at the time, and the Reb Itzler Petterberger, who, these are all names I went to Shalvin, by the way. It's things which, here the Sikhot, and things which are which remain with me. So Reb Itzler Petterberger, who was the Talmid of Reb Yisrael Salanter, came to Volozhin, and he wanted to introduce Musar to the Yeshiva. So Reb Chaim Brisker said to him, Musar is like castor oil. Castor oil was a medicine they had in the old days. So he said, castor oil, if you're sick and you take it, it makes you healthy. But if you're healthy and you take it, it makes you sick. And here, Baruch Hashem, we're all healthy. And therefore, we don't need any castor oil. So therefore, Rabbi Saul Salanter's Musar was rebuffed at the door of Volozhin. Now, let's understand an important thing. Many of us have Musar Sedarim. Musar Sedarim is not the same thing as practicing Musar. Musar Sedarim means you take a sefer. Sometimes it's even not a Musar sefer. You know, you take a Machshava sefer. Lots of us learn from Musar things like maybe Kuzari or Maharal. Mostly not Musar. Mostly that's Machshava. Musar is much more different, and it's not very easy to learn Musar. Musar has to be acted upon. Musar is something where there is a concept where we also have had of learning Musar B'Spilus. Musar B'Spilus with emotion. You say, the way Reb Itzler put it, we call Otsebus for Sain Dolkos, with a mournful, with a sad voice and with burning lips. The one Musar B'Spilus, which is, I've never seen practice in our day and age, but I'm sure there are places where it's done, is to learn Musar with emotion, not to try and cover ground, not to cover knowledge, but rather that it should impact upon a person deep down and change their emotional character. There's an interesting thing which Musar has in similarity, but not precisely the same as Chassidus. Chassidus, which we get a lot more of nowadays, sometimes real Chassidus, sometimes watered down Chassidus, sometimes fake Chassidus, but Chassidus works on the emotions, right? But it doesn't work on the emotions in the same way. It works on the emotions, you know, you go to a good kumzitz, and a kumzitz is a great thing. But a kumzitz really doesn't change your emotional character in the long term. It's an uplifting experience, but it doesn't really penetrate deep down into you. Enough kumzitzim, maybe you become a little bit better person, but that's not what Musar is about. Musar is about penetrating to oneself, understanding what one's personality is. It's very psychological. And working on improving and enhancing one's character. And that's something which requires a different type of emotion. Now, of course, the Misnagdim, the Briskers, the Litvaks, who actually won the war in the long term, but that's for a different time, they don't believe in emotion. They don't believe emotion has no room in Avodas Hashem. If they're radical about it, only intellect has a role in Avodas Hashem. Emotion is something either to be suppressed or sidelined. So the obviously, that's a very different approach. The Musaritniks were also Litvaks, but there's a very different approach between the anti-Musar Litvaks and the pro-Musar Litvaks. But today, back to the pro-Musar Litvaks. So the idea is that we have to have an approach in which we attack our emotion, because our emotion is the source of all our midos. So there were three schools, and I'm just giving you an overview that Idach Zil Gmar. Later on, you're going to go through the course of a life. It's going to take a while to find the different drachim yourselves and find which derech speaks to you. And you can make your own derech, of course, which can be a conglomeration. One of the great things I got here was a broad view of the various different drachim, both in learning and avodas Hashem, from different sources, from which then I could build my own view, which I tried to make a broad view myself. But there were three basic schools of Musar. The Slabodka, Nevardik, and Kelm. And I gave them in not the proper order. The earliest school was Kelm. It was Rebbe Simcha Zissel, who was the Talmud of Rebbe Yisrael Salanter. Then there was the Nevardik, made by Yosef Yosel Horowitz, who was also Talmud of Rebbe Yisrael Salanter, not as close. And then Slabodka, which was by Rebbe Nosson Tzvi Finkel, who was more of a Talmud of the Alter from Kelm. And these were headed by three great people, the Alter from Slabodka, the Alter from Kelm, and the Alter from Nevardik. And they had three different approaches. Now, when I give you an approach, I say these are three different approaches, it's really a stereotype. And it's inaccurate. Every stereotype is inaccurate. If I tell you this, they focused on this and they focused on that, everybody focuses on everything. But there's a certain nekuda which emerges from the rest, which becomes a salient feature of that approach. And the salient feature of Kelm was Seder. And the salient feature of Slabodka was Gadlus HaAdam. And the salient feature of Nevardik was Shiflus HaAdam. And these are all aspects of how a person approaches. She's, as the Mesillas Yesharim says, she's barav yisameis la'adam macho vasa balamo. To determine what is your purpose in this, what is your purpose, what's your obligation in this world. In Kelm, they used to focus on Seder. In Kelm, you would get a knas. If somebody walked into the Beis Medrash, and you lifted up your eyes in the Gemara to see who walked in. That was considered to be a terrible, terrible thing. They say that once some government official walked into the Beis Medrash, nobody looked up. Everybody continued learning. To distract oneself, not to be able to maintain focus, and it's very hard for our ADD generation. Everybody nowadays is ADD. You all know that. Those of you who have cell phones, which is most of you probably, find it almost impossible to, your junior high school years, it's almost impossible to focus on anything for any sustained amount of time, and you probably have now to go through some sort of period of adjustment, detoxification. So the idea is that focus, concentration, order. They say if somebody came and forgot their raincoat in the coat room, they'll find it, come back 30 years later, and they'll find it precisely in the same place in the coat room where they left it. Everything was a mesudar, and if somebody left something, which was not considered to be hefker, it was left in place. It was very, very meticulous order. This didn't work for everybody. One of my great heroes is somebody I heard about here also in Shopping for the first time, Rabbi Avraham Elie Kaplan, who was a great Talmid of Yalta from Slabodka, and who died very, very young. And he was a Rebbe of the father of Rabbi Meir Schlesinger. So that's how we heard about him. And he left the Kelm because a certain personality doesn't have that kind of affinity for organization. Doesn't work that well for them. So then Slabodka, there was a different approach. Slabodka, the approach was on Gadlus HaAdam. Gadlus HaAdam means how great a person's potential is and how much a person can accomplish. The author from Slabodka introduced in the yeshivas that yeshiva bachrim should actually dress like university students. If you see the pictures from Slabodka Talmidim and other yeshivas as time went by from the early 20th century, they're dressed very, very spiffily. They have nice ties, nice suits, nice, no black hats, nice different colors of hats, and they all look very, very, and they're all clean shaven. In fact, when the Slabodka Talmidim moved here in 1920s to start the yeshiva in Hebron, so the reason they started in Hebron is because in Yerushalayim they couldn't fathom people who were clean shaven who actually learned Torah on a high level, especially since they had short jackets. So they couldn't. There was a tremendous tension. So therefore, in order to state the tension, they left Yerushalayim and went to Hebron, just like, of course, you chose not to learn Yerushalayim and are learning Yerushalayim. So the idea of Slabodka was Gadlus HaAdam. A person should feel and work on feeling how great they can be, and that's a mechayev. If a person knows that they're great, they have potential to be great, then that's a tremendous obligation. Rabbi Avraham Elie Kaplan writes, says, people think anava means that a person just thinks of themselves as worthless. He says, that's not an anava. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't think of himself as worthless, and he is anav mikol adam. A person is only an anav if they know that their potential is as high as the Himalayas, and then they use it completely to shame Shammai. As the Moshe Rabbeinu was the Eved Hashem, and his anava was that he accepted all the greatness which he had with a complete hakdasha, a complete devotion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to Ratzon Hashem. So that is, a person has to know how great they are before they have anava. Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of England, said about his rival, Clement Attlee, who was actually beat him in the elections in 1945. He said, Mr. Attlee is a modest man, and he has much to be modest about. So if you have much to be modest about, it's not a trick to be modest. In order to be considered truly humble, a person has to know how great they actually can be. In the Vardak, again, this is a stereotype, but this, the focus is on the antithesis. Understanding of how much human weakness and frailty there is, being aware of it, and using that in order to try and focus on changing one's traits in order to work with those frailties, overcome them when possible, understand them when necessary, and become a greater person that way. The classic Navardic joke is that a new Bacher walks to the Beis Medrash during Musar Seder. He sees two older Bacherim sitting there, and they are learning Musar. And one is saying to others, so obviously the Avodah Musar is, it's not learning Musar, it's doing Musar. So one says, the other, I'm nothing, I'm zero, I'm Ephes V'Klum. The other one says, you think you're nothing, I'm Shav, Kazav, Gornish. And they're going back and forth. And in Navardic, it's interesting, it's a beautiful book in Hebrew about Navardic. It's written by Bibi Netanyahu's father-in-law. Bibi Netanyahu's father-in-law was a Talmud in Navardic. And he went off to Derech for many, many years. Then he came back in his late 80s and 90s. So then, so he wrote Peter Shlomo Ben Arti. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. I don't think it's ever been translated to English. And in Navardic, they used to have a shuk. They used to have a marketplace where they used to exchange Musar ideas. Every Bacher would talk about what issues he faced, and people would trade ideas how to work on those issues. Can you imagine that today? It would never work. I tell kids, my Talmidim in high school, none of you have any friends. And they get all upset. And then I tell them the Rambam. Rambam says, Baknei l'chachaver, that there are three levels of friendship. You should go learn the Mishnah. Mishnah says, if you quote Aristotle, I'm giving it now imprecisely. He says the lowest level of chaver is where two people are in a relationship for mutual benefit. They play basketball together. That's a very low level of friendship. Second level of friendship is a higher level, where that is a more profound friendship, where two people are comfortable sharing with each other their shortcomings, their weaknesses, their secrets, so to speak, letting their hair down with each other. The third level of friendship, says the Rambam, is when you have two people devoted to a cause which is transcendent and profound and uplifting, and they help each other to accomplish that. And that, says the Rambam, is the Knei L'Chachaver of the Mishnah, because it has to be like Aseh L'Chorav. It's like Aseh L'Chorav is that you should have a Rebbe who tries to uplift you, so you should have a Chaver who tries to uplift you. And of course they all say, very few friends on level two, if any. Most American males have none, and there are no friends on level three. So if you think you have friends, you have no friends, and you should realize that. And maybe in life you'll get one or two friends. Maybe. It's possible. So the idea of friendship is this idea of being able to work with somebody on one's... Can you imagine that? Talking to your friend next to you. So look at your friend next to you and think, we're actually talking to this guy about my weaknesses and shortcomings? No way. It doesn't work that way. But that's what they did in Navardic. And they worked on their shiflus, understanding that. So the third guy, the new Bacher, comes in, and he says, he's, when Navardic does what Navardic does, and he sits down, he starts saying, Ich bin garnished, Efes, Klum, Shav, Sheker, Chazav. So one elder Bacher says, the other elder Bacher, he says, look, he just got here already, he thinks he's a nothing. So it takes a long time sometimes to get to that true nothingness, to actually not fake oneself out. So I used to think myself out and think about, the Gemara talks about all sorts of fake Hasidim. People who pretend to be Hasid. or fake prushim. There are lots of people like that. And sometimes we even fool ourselves. That's why it's so imperative to have a sense of cheshbon and nefesh, an understanding of who we are deep down. And it's not usually not the same as the persona we project. And an idea of how to work on that underlying, those underlying issues of our character and personality which we have. And each one of us is different. Shem Shepard, Sufem Shonos, Kachto, the same Shonos. There are no two people have the same issues. People have similar issues. Just like people have similar potentials. But no two people have precisely the same potential. So too, people have similar issues. And they can relate about them. But every person has to know where they're holding and work on their precise concerns. And that's what Shlomo Melech meant when he told Mechanek, every person has their own derech in which they can approach their milus and chesrenus and work with them. Now, this is something which, when I was here in Yeshiva, it was something which I first learned about. I want to tell you what it was like for me in Yeshiva when I first got here. I got here in 1978. I don't feel old except when I say things like this. So when I got in 1978, none of these buildings existed. There was the old dormitory, which is now is the Yeshiva Gedolah dormitory. And there were just building the new dormitories. The dormitories, the ones, I don't know, they still have the blue hanging things outside the windows. No, they took those down? High school dorms. So those are the new dorms. They were just opening up then, 1978. So I got here 2 weeks late because my brother's bar mitzvah was that was in Elul. So they forgot I was coming. So they didn't have a place. So they put me in a bomb shelter. A bomb shelter. There are a bunch of used to be the Otzar Svarim. Used to be coal. And that matter, I think they're coal houses. And one of the buildings, which was way back, the original buildings of the yeshiva. And they put me in this bomb shelter with people from Shir Gimel. So I was very young when I got here. I was 16. And these people were 21 years old or so. And I was used to in high school getting 7 hours of sleep a night. That's the way it was. And all of a sudden, I'm with these people who come in at 1 in the morning. And to top it off, right over me, in the Otzar Svarim, was where the Svarim started saying Slichus. Because it was Elul at 5 in the morning. So here I was, getting woken up at night, and getting woken up in the morning, and getting no sleep. And this is something which I couldn't hack. It was horrible. So back then there was one public telephone in the yeshiva outside the base medrash, and you didn't call America except in their very, very severe conditions. And I called my parents and asked them, can I please come back to America? I can't do this. It's impossible. You know, I had people still tell me when they come, before they come to yeshiva in Israel, they can't imagine how they can hack the schedule. The schedule seems so rigorous compared to your high school schedule. How can you possibly do it? And in fact, I had this problem. It really didn't work for me. And I was very, very sad and depressed and upset. And I asked my friends if I could go back to America. They were somewhat shocked. And obviously it would have cost them a lot of money. But they said, I should say a lot. Back then, tuition was $3,000 a year. A lot of money. So they said, okay, yes. So I figured, you know what? And once I'm here already, I'll stick it out to Sukkos. Because I can bear the torture of being here at the Sukkos. Baruch Hashem, I stayed for 3 years. So a person always faces the nisyonos which they think they can't overcome, which from the beginning. And when they say kashos, it's really true. It's very hard to begin to do something new. It's extremely difficult. And so therefore, a person has to have a bitachon that when they start, there's going to be a light at the end. There's possibly a light at the end of the tunnel, even though you can't see it. Now, since you've all been here for Elul Zman already, so I'm sure you all are used to the schedule. And you have no problem going to sleep at 1 o'clock in the morning after extra starting and getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning, whatever time you get up, back then it was 6:30, in order to go to davening and have maybe even a seder before davening. So it took me quite a few months to actually get there. I was not there to begin with. I couldn't understand going to 10:30 at night, which was the end of the third Seder. But eventually, one gets there. And when one gets there, it's an amazing feeling, and you can't even understand how a few months ago, you didn't see how obvious it was that this is what life is all about. It's interesting how quickly a person can actually change if they put their mind to it, and if they understand that this is where the true pleasure of devoting oneself to something greater, something higher, something which, although you might not think about now, is at the core of Kedusha, that is something phenomenal and something amazing. And there's a story which somebody reminded me of just as I walked in this morning, which I wanted to share with you as well, which is that I think it was the end of my second year in Chalvin. So I was thinking of switching yeshivas. Maybe it was the end of my first year. So I was thinking of switching yeshivas. I went to a bunch of yeshivas to look them over for Shabbos, and I went to the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Rosh Yeshiva said to me, he said, in Hebrew of course, Bekofel, Gadol Ador lo tiyeh, Tamid Chacham Chashuv ken, Aval lo Gadol Ador. So, just in case you understand that, I'm sure you do, but Bekofer, the Gadol Ador you're not going to become. You're going to become a Chashuv Tamid Chacham, but you're not going to become a Gadol Ador. At the time, I was 17 years old, I thought, what kind of chutzpah? Of course I'm going to be the Gadol Ador. Well, dare he say that I'm not going to become a Gadol Ador, I'm just a Tamid Chacham Chashuv. So over the years, I came to recognize that he was right, that not everybody is meant to be a Gadol Ador, but a Tamid Chacham Chashuv is not a bad thing. The Baruch Hashem managed to write several Svarim, learned some Shas a bunch of times, and it's okay to be a Tamid Chacham Chashuv, and every one of you can become one, if you put your minds to it. What does Tamid Chacham Chashuv mean? It means that you are devoted to growth in a sustained way over time, and that you constantly try and find new challenges to develop yourself and your potential in all areas of life to the extent you possibly can. It helps to have a good Yetzer Hara. I have to tell people I'm a bit of an expert in Ayurveda. So one of my great Yetzer Haras, it's a very bad one, is to go and passel a town's Eruv. I get a special thrill. This is a mitzvah which has been very hard for me to break. I've broken a little bit, but there's a special, and the Germans have a term, it's called Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude means joy at somebody else's downfall. So this is something which is people misunderstand. I think Kina Sarfin Tarva Chachma is l'chatchila, it's a b'diyevin. Once you have the meat of Kina, so you should use it for Kina Sarfin, in order to compete with other people to become a bigger Tamil Chacham. But really, Kina is a bad meter. So the same thing, once you have Yetzer Hara to passel Eruvin, so then you should use it for a good thing, learn Eruvin, and become an expert, and then you can passel more Eruvin. But obviously that is Mitoso Lishma, Bar Lishma. Eventually you have to try and break that meter as well. And that is a meter also that Shlomo Melech says, Bin Fol Oivachal Tismach. That's supposed to be happening when somebody else suffers. So, yes, it's good to have the use to channel and harness the Yetzer Hara, but until you're ready to get rid of it, it's good to channel and harness the Yetzer Hara and use it with Shem Shemayim for the purpose of overcoming these obstacles. And it's important while you're here, for however long you're here, to tap into the resources. I mentioned before how many resources we had when you were here, and there was Rav Tzuriel, the Mashgiach, who was an expert in Maharal. There was later on Rav Gantz, who still here, came in, who was an expert in Rav Kook, and he's still here, right? Yeah. So there are all sorts of resources to get, and no derech, one derech is going to be the same for one person as for another person, whether it's in Torah, whether it's in Tefillah, whether it's in Avodas Hashem, whatever the case may be. And it's something which when Eretz Yisrael is a unique place in the sense that you're able to be able to focus on things which you're not going to be able to focus in when Chas v'Shalom, somebody passes, you have to go back to Chutz Laretz. So therefore it's a time when every moment should be precious. Now, and again, I want to talk about the use of the Yetzer Hara. In my day, Friday was an off day. This would never have happened in my day. Nobody would be in the Beis Medrash at 9 in the morning. I'm shocked. In my day, everybody be Yerushalayim. This was not Fridays was the day you went to Yerushalayim. But it's completely mutter, right? If you saw it for Friday morning, they used to do the sponge on the Beis Medrash. So you were able to leave the yeshiva and go to Yerushalayim, and that's what obviously many people did for a long time, sometimes for an entire year. So at some point I realized, you know what, I'm wasting Friday night, Friday anyway. So I might as well stay up all night Thursday night and learn. And said, I'm going to Yerushalayim, I'll sleep on Friday. So that's what I started doing towards the middle of my first year in Shalvim. And gradually, over time, I'm saying this not just because I'm boasting, and I have a midah of boasting, but to give you an idea of how a person changes one's midos over time. So the gradually, at first I slept all Friday and got up like an hour before Shabbos. And then gradually, over time, I whittled away at it and said needed less and less sleep. And there was a time when after when I was in the mirror, when I used to come into Shalvim every Friday morning to learn with Rav Katzev, who was a Rebbe here at the time, a good friend of mine. And I did not sleep from Thursday afternoon till Friday night. And I didn't have to drive, obviously, so it was not an issue. So the and I love coffee. So the idea is that a person could develop every mitzvah like that over time. By the way, that lasted to stay up all night Thursday night and continue learning on Friday till my first child was born. That was the end. So the sometimes you have to realize that getting married brings a different set of nisyonos, but you have time for that. So the idea is a person can't do something right away all the time. You can't change yourself cold turkey, although the verdict that was the shita, because it was supposed to try and change himself overnight, in a moment. But usually that doesn't work for us. But a person over time can whittle away at their negative midos, can whittle away at their characteristics which are problematic, and change themselves. And I want to tell you something else about learning. What I learned here in Shalvim is how to write. Because I took copious notes, and back then we didn't use computers to take notes. As a matter of fact, if you go down, I don't know if it's still here, if you go down to Otzer Sforim, if you look in the section on Gittin, you might find a volume called Shurei HaRamim HaMaseches Gittin. Shurei HaRamim HaMaseches Gittin is my notebooks from the year that we learned Gittin here in Yeshiva. 300 pages of notes, which I took from the various different Shurim, which then we photocopied in the year, which was a big deal back then, and made into a bound volume. I don't know if it's still here. Somebody should check and see if it's still around. So a person is, one of the things which we don't learn in Yeshiva, unless we try and develop it ourselves, is how to write. And how to write is something which is a tremendous skill, because self-expression is one of the ways in which a person acquires midos todos. If you don't know how to express yourself, you don't know how to understand yourself. And therefore, it's important to work on one's capacity to write. And if you can write poetry, it's even better. Well, something which I say to high school guys, and they totally can't relate to. So you're out of high school. You know that. You understand already. There's a concept of working on one's emotion. If you can write yourself poetry, I don't mean poetry, you know, roses are red, violets are blue. I mean something which expresses the depth of your nefesh, the depth of your ambitions, the depth of your strivings, your kechus and nefesh coming out with emotion. That is an amazing thing which helps in self-development. A person, I tried this once, but I'm not organized enough. I would not work in Kelm to keep a diary. Doesn't work. But one of the things which inspired me very greatly, when I was in yeshiva, a bunch of Goyim died. Well, because 3 years it happens. I remember one of the first levayas I went to in Eretz Yisrael with the yeshiva was Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz's levaya. And there I was standing around by the outside the mirror, and there was somebody standing there. It was just by himself with one time. I asked who that was, and they said that's Shlomo Zalman. So you know, in the streets you can meet the Goyim Torah. So one of the people who was nifter when I was in Shalvim in 1980 was Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. Rav Yitzchak Kuttner was one of the great Rosh Yeshiva in America, one of the great Slabodka Talmidim. One of the great, if you can get a hold, and I don't know if they have it here, but they probably do, of the Sefer Zikar and Marana Pachad Yitzchak. This made a tremendous impression on me when I was in the mirror a few years later, where they put out his biography and his notes and his diary. And his diary was not a diary, a dear diary, today I had fish. His diary was, this is what I worked on today. This is what my, realized were my issues and what I worked on. This is what I did today. Also, the great Slabodka Talmidim, even the author himself, kept diaries in order to work on themselves. I tried once. I still have the notebook from which I started. It's like one of the small Israeli notebooks. I don't know if they make them anymore. But which I started, I always just like writing on graph paper. So that, which I started doing it, but I didn't get very far. But there are people here who are capable, I'm sure, of keeping a diary with their everyday she'ifos, their everyday ambitions, their everyday accomplishments, their everyday failures, in order to work from day to day. And it's tremendous, tremendous impetus to spur on your growth and to make you a greater person. Of course, a very basic aspect of Musar and becoming a greater person is to try and do as much chesed as one can for somebody else. But in yeshiva, the opportunities are limited. It's not so easy to do a chesed. One of the ways in which you can do a chesed for another person in yeshiva is obviously to help them out with their learning when they need help in learning and their avodas Hashem. And the Gemara says that a person who's really, really an avodas Hashem is one who loves tochecha. The Gemara in Erchin says that it's not easy to find somebody who likes to get rebuked, who likes to get positive, constructive critique, but somebody who does, those are the people who come with the Holy Torah. That's what made Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara says Rabbi Akiva. So if you and a friend can get together and say, listen, Reuven, if you can give me constructive critique, I appreciate it. Tell me what I can work on, what I'm doing wrong. It makes you vulnerable. And most American guys, I know about Israelis probably too, most American guys do not like being vulnerable to other guys, but it's something which can create a tremendous sense of personal growth, something which can help each re'eh yomar chazak, to help other people out and to become a greater person in that way. So writing, talking over things, pursuing issues in Avodas Hashem, and pursuing your Rabbeim. The Rabbeim here, again, as I said, many of them are Tamidim, are very great people. They themselves by now are very great people. And they themselves have gone through them, the struggles, and they picked up sources, and they have ideas, and usually we don't get close enough to them to expose ourselves to those ideas. And that is a big problem. Because, again, in our day and age, you can go to a shir and not have a personal connection with a Rebbe. It happened to me many times that I went to a shir and I did not develop a personal connection with a Rebbe. And it was a problem. Obviously not getting enough out of the experience. And you can develop a superficial connection. I want to tell you, particularly about Rabbi Waxman, that one of the most awe-inspiring experiences in my life was being at his chasna when he got married. And his grandfather, David Lifshitz, who was a Talmud of Shimon Shkop, did you ever tell them this? Their grandfather was David Lifshitz, a Talmud of Shimon Shkop? Do they know? Did he tell you this? Okay. Did you ask him then what David Lifshitz was like? What was special about him? You didn't! Do you realize what an opportunity you might be missing? When Reb David Lifshitz stood there, I guess he did this, I've done saying this other weddings, not just his grandson's wedding, and saying, Tzabi Yeshuas Yaakov, and Tarli Beinu, Tarli Beinu, this is an incredible moment. There's certain things, on way here, on the plane, I watched Inside Out. And Inside Out has this idea of core memories. And many of the core memories which I have, I got here in Shalvim, and they remain with me for permanently. And that this happens also to be one of my core memories. And if I hadn't told you about this now, you probably, and he could tell you much more, would not have heard it from him. And you wouldn't have known to pursue it from him. And you wouldn't have known that this person is the grandson of a Talmud of Shimon Shkop and has had access to godless on levels which we normally don't comprehend. And this is just Rebari. There are many different people who have hear different things. Rabbi Yaakovson, who's the Rosh Hashiva, is the Talmud of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, which I don't know if you, there is a language barrier there, but you know, if you were able to someday develop enough Hebrew to talk to him, there's an amazing, amazing resource, the amazing depth, amazing background. Rabbi Yammer was in Shir with me, we were in Shir together, and he speaks English, I know that. And he has a unique character, as we all know, but there is a lot of things one can go to him and say, please tell me what it was like here in Shalvim. Please tell me what drachim you picked up, how they influenced your life. It's something which if you don't ask, they won't tell. And if they won't tell, it's a loss which you're going to take with you, not even knowing, for the rest of your life. So you have to go to Rabbeim, and then you have to drive them crazy. It's a very, very important part of chinuch, that you drive your Rabbeim crazy. If you don't do it, you're failing your mission and your purpose here. And as I said, you're going to develop in the course of your year here, or as I said before, your 3 years here, many core memories which are going to be the things on which you expand the rest of your life. You're going to pick up yedios. There's things which I picked up here. There was an older bacher. We were learning Ksuvos. His name was Yair Ben Dov. And he's in Yerushalayim. And he said to me once, something again which sticks to you. Don't know when this is going to stick to you. He said, we learned Ksuvos. He said, we learned Pesach Pesuach. The Daftes. He said, the Chazakah lo hochim bekilo. In Chazakos, You don't go by weight. It's a very basic story if you're learning like a shiva. You don't say this chazaka has 10 pounds of pressure and this chazaka has 5 pounds of pressure and the 10 pound chazaka beats the 5 pound chazaka. And this is like one offhand statement which he said, and that blessed it with me. That's a core memory which I got. You never can tell when you're going to overhear something. If your ears are open, as Naimem v'yishmu, then something is going to stick to you which you never can tell when it's going to have an impact upon you forever and ever. And it's true about learning in Lomdus, and true about learning in Musa, and true about learning in Machshava, and true about learning in Halacha. Remember the first Chabura I gave here, we had a Halacha Chabura with an Israeli Avrech who did the Chabura, and I worked day and night for a long time Chabura on a Tzitz Eliezer, on how to, whether you're allowed to drive ride on a bus on Motzei Shabbos when you know the bus left the station before Shabbos ended. This is my first real exposure to Halacha. And to sit down with the Tzitz Eliezer was an amazing experience, and I can recommend it to anybody. Take the Tzitz Eliezer, take the Shuba Sefer, sit down with it and go through a tshuva and learn the halachic process. And then you're going to be able to yourself develop yourself over time and understand, and eventually maybe write a Sefer on Eruvin. So do things in order to develop your core, do things in order to develop your basis, your fundamental perspectives, do things in order to be able to establish a lifelong devotion to Torah and Avodas Hashem. Stay for 3 years. Make sure that you get a psak before you go back to America. Chas v'shalom, you have to go back. And you shall be zeichet to grow in Torah and Avodas Hashem, Yir Shamayim, and eventually be Mekarei Shem Shamayim with Shem Lucifer's. Shkoyach. Side effects.